The Gemara says that the word Haloim refers to Malchus, refers to monarchy, to kingship. And not just to Malchus, which is reposed in a single individual. Rather, the word Haloim is only used in reference to kings who have the capacity to form, to found a dynasty. And for that reason, the word Halom is used in connection with David HaMelech, who was the father of the Davidic dynasty, but was not used in connection with Moshe Rabbeinu, who, although having the status of a Melech, was not a dynastic monarch, but rather an individual monarch. The Gemara, however, is troubled by the example of Shaul, because Shaul, it seems, is more similar to Moshe than to David. There is no Shaulite dynasty. And nevertheless, the Gemara applies the word Halom even to Shaul HaMelech. In the story, initially, when Shmuel HaNavi gathers all of Klal Yisrael and they cast lots to determine who it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has designated to be their king and save them from the Pelishtim. And the lots grow progressively narrower to Shevet Binyamin, to the family of Shaul, and finally to Shaul himself. But when they search for Shaul, he's nowhere to be found. And Shmuel asks, Haba'od Halom Ish, has any other man come Halom? Has any other man come here, come close? And they search for Shaul, and they find him Nechba El Akelim, hiding amongst the baggage. So the word Halom is applied to Shaul HaMelech, even though on the face of it, he was not the father of a dynasty. And the Gemara gives two answers to explain this application of the word Halom to Shaul. The first answer is that indeed, Shaul HaMelech was partially the founder of a dynasty, because his son Ish-Boshes ruled over part of Klal Yisrael for 2 years until the reign of David HaMelech was solidified. There was contention, there was civil war, and only after 2 years of conflict was David universally acknowledged as the king of Klal Yisrael. So Shaul, in a sense, was the father of a dynasty, because Shaul's son, Ish-Boshes, became a king in his successor. That's one answer that the Gemara gives. The other answer that the Gemara gives is that Shaul HaMelech indeed had the capacity to be the father of a dynasty. When Shmuel HaNavi anointed him, when Klal Yisrael appointed him, that anointment and that appointment was sufficient. It invested him with sufficient stature that if he fulfilled the mitzvot of Hashem properly, he could have founded an eternal dynasty in the same way that David, by virtue of his proper fulfillment of the mitzvos HaMalchus, founded an eternal dynasty. However, the reason that Shaul forfeited that opportunity is because he neglected to fulfill his monarchic functions. He neglected to listen to the word of Hashem when it came to the Milchemes HaMalik. And these two answers of the Gemara are incredibly yesodostic for two reasons. The first thing I want to discuss, which connects with this Gemara, also connects with the Inyanim of Purim and the mitzvah of Mechias Amalek, the mitzvah of eradicating the nation of Amalek. Rabbi Soloveitchik points out an anomaly in the formulation of the Rambam. The Midrashim Chazal tell us that there's an order, there's a seder in which three mitzvos must be performed after Klal Yisrael enter Eretz Yisrael. The first mitzvah is appointing a melech. It's a mitzvah, and it must be performed first of the following three. The second mitzvah is Mechias Amalek, is eradicating the memory of Amalek. And the third mitzvah is building a Beis HaMikdash. And the Rambam tells us, he codifies this halacha, and tells us that they must be performed in this order. Now, Rabbi Schneer Cutler asks, how can it be that the Rambam is codifying a halacha which seemingly is only relevant historically. When the Jews entered Eretz Yisrael, they had an obligation to appoint a melech before eradicating Amalek. But what relevance does that have for us nowadays, or for the Jews after that first initial appointment and the first initial fight against Amalek and the initial building of Bayis Rishon? So Reb Schneer is medayik from the Rambam that it's not just a halacha which applied back then to the dor that entered Eretz Yisrael. Rather, it applies for all generations. In other words, Jews can never go to war with Amalek without a king at their helm. If there's no king, we can't fight Amalek. We don't have permission. We have to first appoint a melech, and only after we appoint a melech can we go fight Amalek. And Rabbi Soloveitchik emphasizes this point by noting that the Rambam diverges from the Lashonos of Chazal in his quotation of this halacha. Because whereas Chazal quote the pasuk from the Torah as a proof text that Minoy Melech precedes Milchemes Amalek, they quote the pasuk Yod al Keis Ka Milchama Bashem Ba'Amalek. What's the Yod? What's the hand which sits upon the throne of Hashem, so to speak? That's the Melech. And only afterwards, Yod al Keis Ka, then Milchama Lashem Ba'Amalek. So that's the pasuk which Chazal bring. But the Rambam instead brings a pasuk from Nevi'im. He brings a pasuk where it says, Atalech v'ikisas Amalek, Shmuel tells Shaul, now that I've appointed you to be a king, go and smite Amalek. Why does the Rambam diverge from Chazal in his citation of this proof text? Answers Rabbi Soloveitchik. Because the text of the Torah only indicates that the Minoy Melech must precede Milchemes Amalek. So once we appointed a Melech, we fulfilled the mitzvah. So now, from now until the end of eternity, we're able to fight Amalek. Because we already fulfilled the mitzvah of Minoy Melech. We don't have a Melech anymore now, but we fulfilled the mitzvah. So now we can go on and destroy Amalek. But the fact that the Pasuk in Navi tells us something additional, which we don't hear from the pasuk in the Torah. It tells us that it's not sufficient merely for us as a collective to have fulfilled the mitzvah of Minoy HaMelech, and then we can go on without a melech even and fight Amalek. The pasuk in Sefer Shmuel is telling us that without a king at the head of our army, we cannot go and fight Amalek. Atalich, now Shmuel says, now that there's a king, go king and fight Amalek. Therefore, again, he's medayik that a king is critical and necessary for Mechias Amalek. And Rabbi Soloveitchik goes on and explains that this explains how it can be that Shaul HaMelech was appointed to be a king. There was a nevuah, a prophecy, that he would become a king, perhaps even the father of a dynasty, and that prophecy was never fulfilled because his monarchy was short-lived, and certainly he did not have a lasting dynasty in the same sense that David HaMelech had a lasting dynasty. And Rabbi Soloveitchik asks, we have a principle in Chazal that any nevuah letova, any prophecy that something good will come about, never, ever, ever remains unfulfilled. So how can it be that this prophecy that Shaul would father a dynasty remained unfulfilled? And Rabbi Soloveitchik answers with the yesod which seems to be drawn from our Gemara, although he does not quote our Gemara. And he explains that the prophecy was that Shaul HaMelech would be endowed with the power to found a dynasty. But the use of that power would depend upon Shaul's own volition. If he made proper use of it, thereby demonstrating his suitability and his willingness to be the father of a dynasty, then he would be. But conversely, if he neglected to use that power properly, so then he would not be the father of a dynasty. And we see that Shaul neglected to fulfill his charge properly. Because when he went to fight Amalek, he didn't fight them properly. He spared the king of Amalek. He spared some of their best animals in order to bring his karbanos. And he went against the word of Hashem. And because The nature of the monarchy is so inextricably bound with eradication of Amalek, a failure to properly fulfill the mitzvah of Mechias of Amalek is tantamount to a rejection of the monarchy. And therefore, Shaul actually had the power, he was imbued with this eternal, the power to found an eternal dynasty. But he sacrificed that power by failing to fulfill properly the mitzvah of Amalek. And this seems to resound very nicely with our Gemara, which says that yes, Halom applies to Shaul, because Shaul did have the power to found a monarchy. However, he simply neglected to use that power properly. He wasn't motzi et min hakoach el hapoal. It was a potential, but he didn't actualize it, and therefore the Shaulite dynasty never materialized. Okay, it's a little bit different than our Gemara. Our Gemara says because of gasos haruach, it's because of pride, excessive pride. It's very strange. We know from all over Chazal that Shaul was excessively humble. That's why he lost the monarchy. Maybe the Gemara is just bringing the idea that excessive pride can cause a person to lose the status as the head of a dynasty, but lav dafka to say that this was Shaul's chait. It's just to prove that there is a distinction between Malchus Bekoach and Malchus Befoel, and that just as a person can fail to actualize the potential to be a dynasty by having excessive gasos haruach, a person can similarly fail to actualize that potential by neglecting to fulfill properly the mitzvah of Mechias Amalek. So this is Rabbi Soloveitchik's second proof, which seems to go hand in hand with our Gemara. Rabbi Soloveitchik has a third proof from a Yalkut Shimoni, which says that Yehoshua, in order to go fight Amalek in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, needed to be anointed with the Shemen HaMishcha. Why did he need to be anointed with the Shemen HaMishcha? Because only a king can lead the Jews into battle against Amalek. Moshe was the king of the Jews. And that's what the Gemara tells us over here. But Moshe stayed behind to daven. Okay, is he faulted for that? Is he not faulted to that? It's a discussion in Chazal. But how could Yehoshua have led the battle? He wasn't the king of the Jews. Answer is the Gemara, no, Yehoshua was anointed to be a king of the Jews. In Achinami, he was anointed just like Moshe, not to be the founder of a dynasty, but just to be a king in order to lead the Jews into battle. I would say also, parenthetically, that this may be why the Gemara tells us in Gittin that there is a Mesorah that the Beis HaMikdash can only be destroyed by a king of Rome, because we know that in Chazal, Rome and Esav and Amalek are all associated with one another, and there's this idea that we can only have a proper battle with Amalek, or reciprocally, Amalek can only have a proper battle with us when it's being led by a king. Possibly, there seems to be a parallel there. So these are the three rayos that Rabbi Soloveitchik has, that Malchus is totally bound up with Mechias Amalek, and his second raya seems to go very well with our sugya, that Shaul Taka had the power, the potential to found an eternal dynasty, but he neglected or failed to actualize that potential because he didn't fight Amalek properly. I also wanted to mention very, very briefly that the two Lishonos in our Gemara about whether Shaul had this power to found an eternal dynasty or not may be a machlokes between two seemingly contradictory formulations in the Rambam, one of which the Ravid favors more than the other. The Rambam in Hilchos Malachim, in one place he writes that anybody who's anointed to be a king is imbued with the power to bequeath their monarchy onto their children and their descendants at Sof Kol Hadoros. So that sounds like any time a person is anointed, whether that person be Shaul, whether that person be David, whether that person be one of the Malchi Yisrael, which emerged in the times of Rechavam, David's grandson, any person who's anointed has the power to found an eternal dynasty. So that would seem to jive with the second Lashon of our Gemara, which says that yes, Shaul Taka was endowed with the power to found an eternal dynasty, just that he forfeited it. And yet the Rambam also says that Malchus Beis David, when it arose, so only Malchus Beis David can have eternal kiyum and not other Malchuyos, not the Malchus of Shaul, not the Malchus of Malchai Yisrael. So this second day seems to imply that any Malchus other than Malchus Beis David, in other words, any Malchus which doesn't go to Sheva Yehuda, which was imbued and endowed by Yaakov Avinu and his Nevuah of the Birchos Yaakov, So Yaakov said, Lo Yasar Shevim Yehuda, that Malchus belongs to Yehuda. So therefore, any other Malchus cannot have the same status and therefore cannot be eternal. So the Rambam seems to contradict himself. In one place he writes that non-Yehuda Malchus could be eternal, and in another place he writes that it can't be eternal. That may be the two deos in our Gemara. And there's Yeshuvim Achronim talk about how to resolve the stira in Rambams, and at some other point in Mirtz Hashem we could be ma'arich about it, but for now it's just worth pointing out that our Gemara seems to parallel the two formulations of the Rambam.